Time now for Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 WYTS with Dr. Brian Kivitko. Call 821-1230. That's 821-1230 to discuss your dental issues. Now here's Dr. Kivitko on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Talk 1230 WYTS. Welcome to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kivitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but were too numb to ask. Hello, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kivitko, and thank you for spending your morning with us. What a gorgeous day out there it is. It's Sunday, June 1st, and the final round of the Memorial Tournament is going on today. I'll actually be going to that later on today, and looking forward to that. But if you're not going to the tournament, after the show, of course, feel free to get out and enjoy this day. Work in the yard, go for a walk, walk your dog, whatever. It's just gorgeous. Beautiful, beautiful weather. Now, this week's show is going to be a continuation of last week's show, and the title of that was Who's Who in the Dental Office. And last week, we had a call-in guest who spoke about being a dental lab technician. That was Mr. Rich Odie. And we also had a guest call in, Carol Lunds, and she spoke about being a dental assistant. We had a little bit of technical trouble last week, and so we lost our third guest, and we've invited her back today to try again, and Denise Bowers is her name. We're going to get on to, with Denise here in just a second, but before I do, a little bit of housekeeping, some things we want to go over. First of all, I want listeners to know there are sponsorship opportunities for the show, and in fact, the Brought to You by sponsorship, your business name here, is available. So, if you're interested in that, being a presenting sponsor, give the office a call at 262-9588. Now, on August 23rd, 8 in the morning, at Broadview Golf Course on Headley Mill Road in Pataskala, we're having our second annual Dr. Kivitko Golf Classic. And what that is a chance to come out and have some fun. We're not very good golfers, at least I'm not. It's just a chance to have fun and earn some money, raise some money for the Central Ohio Down Syndrome Association. And what we do is we have one of our patients who is a Down Syndrome patient, and we sponsor her at the Buddy Walk. And we would like to raise some money for the Buddy Walk, or for the Down Syndrome Association. So we're putting the two together. I thought it's appropriate, since today is the final round of the memorial, for us to talk about our own golf classic, which is August 23rd, 8 in the morning. Teams of four, $140, and that includes lunch, and it includes the golf, of course, and two drink tickets. If you only have two of you, you can, that's fine, sign up too. We'll pair you with another couple. So we look forward to having you participate in that, and all of the revenue or all of the proceeds go to a good cause. Next week's show, actually, speaking of the Central Ohio Down Syndrome Association, we're going to have a guest from that association to talk about Down syndrome and how that particular affliction would affect a person's dental appointment and dental disease in general. One more thing, later today, if you're still home and you know how I said go out and enjoy the sunshine, well, at 12:30, go back in the house and watch NBC4. Gail Hogan's Showcase Columbus, because on the at 12:30 today, I will be on that show. It's a chance for some of you out there who have never met me or seen my face to put a face with the voice and name. I'm not sure you'll like what you see, at least as far as the face is concerned, but anyway, you can put a face to a voice. So that's again 12:30, Channel 4, later today. Also, on June 4th, that same show will re-air, this time on WUAB, which is Channel 15 on Time Warner Cable. All right, and also one more thing before we get to Denise, I want to give out Dr. Kivitko's question of the day. And this question is according to the Crown Council, which is a group that does basically patient surveys. The question is, what percent of patients view their dental health as part of their overall health? All right, I'll say it again. What percent of patients view their dental health as a part of their overall health? Your questions, your guesses are welcome by calling 821-1230. You can also send us questions and guesses by email by emailing dentallyspeaking on talk1230@yahoo.com. So feel free to do that. Pick up the phone, whichever you choose. And so now I'd like to introduce our guest. Our guest is Denise Bowers. Denise is Chair and Associate Professor of Dental Hygiene at James A. Rhodes State College in Lima, Ohio. She is the District 5 Trustee of the American Dental Hygienist Association, which is known as the under the letters ADHA. She is the past president of the Ohio Dental Hygienists Association, which is known as the ODHA. And she's a licensed dental hygienist in the state of Ohio and has been since 1981. She has a master's degree in education administration from the University of Dayton and has taught dental hygiene at Rhodes State College for the last 19 years. During school breaks and her summer vacations, she practices dental hygiene for a general dentist in the Findlay area. And Denise also serves as a consultant to the American Dental Association Commission on Dental Accreditation. So Denise is very, very qualified to speak to the topic today. We're very, very happy to have you here today, Denise.
Thanks
so much for getting up early on a Sunday morning and being my guest.
No problem.
So Denise, I guess probably the very first thing we should talk about is what is a dental hygienist? I mean, we know we have dental assistants, we have dental lab techs, we have receptionists, financial secretaries, insurance people, but what is a dental hygienist?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I'd like to preface my answer by saying that a dental hygienist is not a nurse, or oftentimes we're referred to as the girl who helps the dentist.
Well, you know, that's I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the reasons I decided to do this topic, this show, is because people come up to the desk and say, yeah, the nurse told me I need to, you know, schedule, or the nurse, and I'm thinking, do they mean the assistant or do they mean the hygienist? And, of course, I don't employ any nurses, so.
Exactly. Well, a registered dental hygienists are licensed, formally educated oral health care professionals who specialize in providing preventive oral health services. Such services include cleaning the teeth above and below the gum line, taking x-rays, providing nutritional counseling, fluoride treatments, and sealants. And hygienists are also specially trained to screen for signs of oral disease and to educate patients on maintaining optimal oral health. The dentist and the hygienist are the only licensed professionals in the dental office.
Okay, yeah, although there is a certification for assistants, but what you're saying is licensed by the State Dental Board.
Correct.
To actually provide services to a patient that can be charged for.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct, because dental assistants can be certified, and now there's another auxiliary, the EFDAs, or Expanded Function Dental Auxiliaries, that are registered. But the dentist and the hygienist are the only two that actually practice with a license.
Right. And so there's nothing that my dental assistant does that a patient can be charged for. On the other hand, a hygienist cleans a person's teeth. There's a fee for that. They place sealants. There's a fee for that. And so that's the distinction?
Actually, in Ohio, dental assistants with a certain education can place sealants, can do polishings, and the dentist can bill for those types of services. It's the license, which is extensive or much more education and a licensing exam and a clinical exam and that type of thing, which makes the hygienist a more educated and more trained personnel in the dental office.
Well, why don't we get into that? What is the education requirement to be a dental hygienist?
There are different schools in the state of Ohio. There's a four-year school at the Ohio State University, and the rest, the other 11 dental hygiene schools, are two-year colleges. And all of the dental hygiene programs have to be accredited by the American Dental Association Commission on Dental Accreditation. Dental hygienists graduate from schools accredited by the commission. And the Commission on Dental Accreditation sets the standards for everything that must be included in dental hygiene education. And there are so many people, dentists, patients, and the community that don't realize everything that's involved in dental hygiene education. And I'll just list a few things. Dental hygiene curriculum, in our curriculum, we have to demonstrate, our graduates have to be competent in things like biomedical sciences, dental sciences, communication, psychology, sociology, chemistry, biochemistry, immunology, pathology, nutrition, pharmacology. We have to understand abnormal conditions to recognize the parameters of comprehensive dental hygiene care. Our graduates have to have a level of understanding that assures that the health status of patients will not be compromised by the services a dental hygienist provides. We learn and graduate being competent in oral health education, patient management, the provision for service and management of special needs patients, emergencies, infection and hazards control. The list just goes on and on. We learn to assess and plan and develop a dental hygiene diagnosis, a dental hygiene treatment plan. We teach our students to be problem solvers and critical thinkers. And once we do all of this in the curriculum, then our graduates have to pass national, regional, and state board exams prior to even being granted a license to practice in the state of Ohio.
Two questions. One is biomedical. Can you explain what that part of the training is? I think it was the second or third one you mentioned.
Biomedical sciences. Well, we group this in terms of anatomy and physiology, microbiology. We have two different classes in anatomy and physiology that students have to take. Some students at The Ohio State University would probably branch out into more science-related courses, but just within the dental hygiene curriculum, things like basic chemistry, basic or advanced chemistry, medical terminology, human values, those type of courses are grouped into our biomedical sciences.
So it's a basic understanding of science, basic understanding of how the body functions.
Exactly.
Okay. And then you also mentioned the regional exam, the national exam,
correct.
And what was the third one?
National, regional,
and state.
And state.
Okay. I don't know that we'll have a time for your answer before the break, but what I would like to, I'm going to pose the question now, then I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping here,
sure.
And then when we come back from the break, I'll get your answer. But my question is, you have to take these three exams, and do dental hygienists then, when they become certified, licensed, do they have reciprocity to be able to go and practice anywhere in the nation by virtue of passing those exams?
Okay.
So, yeah, just kind of, we'll get that answer when we come back. I do want people to know that this show is available by podcast by going to www.talk1230wyts.com. And when you go to that site, there's a spot where right next to the word home, right next to the home, it says on air. Put your mouse over on air, drop-down box comes up. That gives all of the on-air talent. I don't know if I'm talented, but I'm on air. And you would choose Dr. Kvitko. Takes you to my page. And in the middle of that page, under the smile, it says go to podcast. So you can click on listen to whatever date show you did not catch or would like to listen to again. So feel free to do that. The other is give us a call if you have any questions for either myself or our guest Denise Bowers by calling 821-1230. That's 821-1230, or send us an email to dentallyspeakingontalk1230@yahoo.com. You are listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 with Dr. Kvitko, also known as everything you've always wanted to know about dentistry, but we're too numb to ask. We'll be right back.
When you're smiling, when you're...
Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Thank you for joining us this morning on this beautiful, beautiful day. Final round of the Muirfield Golf Tournament is today, and what we're talking about today is who's who in the dental office, follow-up to last week's show, and we have a guest on the line with us. Her name is Denise Bowers, and we posed a question to Denise before going to the break. Before I go back to Denise, though, we've had a couple people call in with guesses for the Dr. Kvitko question of the day. Karen in Reynoldsburg called in a guess of 50%. Now, for those of you that don't remember, the question is, what percent of patients view their dental health as part of their overall health? Tony called in a question. Tony's from Hilliard of 32%. Sarah from Powell called in a guess of 68%. None of those are correct. We'll get to the answer later on in the show. But for now, let's go back to our guest. And before we left for the break, we posed a question to Denise, which was, once a hygienist becomes certified or licensed, I guess it is, through the state, regional, and national board exams, do they have reciprocity, meaning can they go and get a job anywhere in the country and not have to take a further exam? So, Denise, what's the answer to that?
Believe it or not, the answer is not as simple as you might think. Every state in the nation establishes their own guidelines. We are in the Northeast Regional Board. Ohio is in the Northeast Regional Board constituency. So most of the time when our graduates leave Ohio and go to like Indiana or Michigan, various states, there's about 13 states in the NERB region, their license is accepted. Other than they may need to take the state law exam for that particular state. Ohio, the Ohio State Dental Board works diligently to accept licensees from other states. So the reciprocity issue is a huge issue right now with dental hygienists being able to administer local anesthesia. They're very specific guidelines in the current statute that says this is what a hygienist needs to do and this is how they are to practice and they need to take an exam that is approved by the Ohio State Dental Board. So if the Ohio State Dental Board doesn't approve the licensing exam or the local anesthesia exam, excuse me, from another state, then that hygienist is not able to administer local anesthesia in Ohio. So that's just an example of the reciprocity issues that hygienists and dentists as well face when they're traveling from state to state.
And why do you think that is? Because, I mean, teeth in Texas are the same as teeth in Idaho and teeth in Michigan or Ohio.
Exactly. I know the American Dental Hygienists Association is a strong advocate of reciprocity, and the ADHA is working extremely hard to develop a national clinical exam, and we already have a national board exam, but we're not there yet. Again, the problem lies in the various states not being willing to accept a clinic exam from another region.
So are they saying that if a dental hygienist takes the Ohio test, that that's not good enough to practice in, say, California? They don't think we know how to clean teeth in Ohio?
Apparently. And it's actually the NERB, the Northeast Regional Board exam that we pass, and that consists of two different components at this point. It's clinical as well as computerized. Some states and nation are not willing to accept the Northeast Regional Board. But then again, in Ohio, if a hygienist or a dentist takes the Western Regional Board, our requirements say that they have to pass, which I agree with, have to pass all sections of the Western Regional Board exam in order for it to be accepted in Ohio. And I don't have any problem with that, but sometimes you have various states or various applicants that don't necessarily pass all the parts of another regional exam, and then they question why they still can't obtain a license in Ohio.
Well, this may not be a fair question for you, but do you know the answer anyway? I'll ask.
Okay, go ahead.
Am I mistaken? I thought nurses did have reciprocity. A nurse can go anywhere in the country.
Is that true? And I don't know the answer to that question.
You don't?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I have no idea.
Well, if any of our listeners know, pick up the phone and give us a call.
That would be great, because then that would help us.
Yeah, 821-1230 is the number. Because it seems like that it just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense for the dental profession either.
Agreed.
I was hearing, I was at a CE course, was it 2 weekends ago? And some of the attendees were talking amongst themselves about going and receiving hands-on training for placement of implants. Mm-hmm. And one of the concerns that always comes up is you have a dentist that either comes from Ohio, goes from Ohio to, say, Pennsylvania to take a course, or vice versa. And apparently they cannot, without special permission, special temporary licensure from the state, take that course because it involves working on a patient. Mm-hmm. And their license may be in Pennsylvania. I realize Pennsylvania is in the Northeast Regional Board exam territory, so that would probably be a relatively easy one. But to get a temporary license is not an easy task either, because the board only meets so often.
Correct.
And you have to get your application in by a certain time and wait for them to meet.
Yep, and they discuss it all at one time. I attend most of the highest dental board meetings, and it's a pretty formal process.
Yeah, and so, yeah, you're on the board, and
well,
so.
No, I'm not. I'm not. a guest. Okay.
Oh, okay. Okay. But at least you get to hear and see
absolutely.
Inner workings.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned, you mentioned something that we want to get to when we come back from the break.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you happen to mention local anesthesia mm-hmm. being provided by dental hygienists. And I don't think a lot of people realize that that is something that a hygienist can now do. And we definitely want to talk about that when we come back from the break. So you guys out there, feel free to pick up the phone. Give us a call, 821-1230. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS.
Keep smiling at trouble.
Welcome back to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko on this beautiful Sunday morning, June 1st. We are talking with Denise Bowers, who is a dental hygienist and is helping us understand the practice of dental hygiene. Before we go back to Denise, I have a few people that have called in with guesses to our question of the day, which is, what percent of patients view their dental health as part of their overall health? Kama in Grove City called in a guess of 29%. Bill in West Jefferson, 43%. Sue in Dublin, 82%. No one has hit it yet. Sue's actually getting pretty close there, but we will give the answer later on in the show. Also, don't forget to tune in today on NBC4, 12:30, and see me appear on Showcase Columbus with Gail Hogan, or June 4th, Wednesday, on WUUAB, Channel 15 on Time Warner Cable. All right, so Denise, we were talking about local anesthetic and hygienists, and it's a relatively new phenomenon. I don't think a lot of people realize that a dental hygienist can now go back to school, receive certain training and mm-hmm. testing, and be allowed to administer local anesthetic to patients directly, not needing the dentist to do it.
Correct.
And how did that come about, and how long ago did that begin, and what are the educational requirements for that?
Well, it was initiated by the Ohio Dental Hygienists Association several years ago, but it finally came into law and was signed by the governor 2 years ago this spring, I believe. And it's pretty rigorous. It was modeled after the Michigan Dental Hygienists Association local anesthesia bill or legislation. And at this point, hygienists, in order to administer local anesthesia, need to take a 29-hour training course or continuing education course. 14 of those hours must be in lecture and 15 must be clinical, or it could be reversed. It could be 14 clinical and 15. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah, probably close enough.
And I know it's 29 hours, and the course has to be approved by the Ohio State Dental Board. And then at the completion of that 29-hour course, the hygienist needs to take a local anesthesia examination that is approved by the Ohio State Dental Board, and they're, of course, supporting the Northeast Regional Board local anesthesia exam. So okay. Once a hygienist takes this 29-hour course, they have to take the exam, the local anesthesia exam, within 18 months, and then you take the Northeast Regional Board local anesthesia exam. Then you have your scores, you know, as long as you've passed the nerve exam, then you are allowed to administer local anesthesia in an office.
You said NERB, not NERD, right?
You're correct. Correct. Although I haven't taken a clinical or a licensing exam for years, so I was a little bit nervous. It was all on the computer. It was 50 questions, and it was extremely easy.
Oh, okay. So what you're saying is to the hygienists who are listening is you're encouraging them to
absolutely
go out and how would they obtain information to begin that process?
Well, the Ohio State Dental Board has a list of all approved courses in the state of Ohio. I know Sinclair, my school, Road State College, offers the training course. Stark State, I believe, does. Owens, I believe, does. Ohio State University does. There are several educational institutions that offer this 29-hour local anesthesia course.
Okay, and let me add that as a dentist, and we haven't really talked much off the air, I think this is wonderful. It's a long time coming. I think for years hygienists have been overtrained and for the duties they had been allowed to perform.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are, as far as I'm concerned, they're pretty much on even par with nurses,
mm-hmm.
except nurses are allowed to start IVs. And,
exactly, and push meds.
And push medications, mm-hmm. and the hygienists were not allowed to do any of that.
Correct.
And so congratulations for getting that passed.
Thank you.
I think it's the profession is better off for it. You know, I am all about patient comfort in my office,
mm-hmm.
and we will regularly recommend to a patient that if they're concerned about comfort, you know, let us numb you, because there's no need to sit there through an unpleasant procedure anymore.
Correct. Correct. And what is so funny is a lot of my friends are using this a lot in their office, and now those patients actually request the hygienist perform that service rather than the dentist.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I just thought that was kind of, I had to throw that in. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if it's just because of the technique, or it's a different person, or if really, in actuality, the hygienist is a little more gentle. I don't know.
I would bet that there's some of that. I know that in my office I am very, very keyed into that. I personally provide that very, very slow and gentle. And my charge to my hygienists who are about to take the course was, once you take that course, just so that you know, I'm not going to let you numb anybody unless you promise to do it my way, to do it a certain way that I know is successful in numbing people with them hardly realizing that we've done it. So,
right.
And I'm getting compliments from my patients saying that my hygienist, you know, is doing a great job.
That's good.
We have three hygienists in the office, anyone that I hire that is not already local anesthetic trained, I have them promise me at the time of their interview that they will take the course and will become certified to do that. And so it's been great, because if the dentist is behind and there's this discussion about being numb,
uh-huh.
wanting to be numb, I can envision that there are times when it's kind of discouraged, you know, do they really need to be numb because I'm behind, kind of a thing?
Correct.
And I think, obviously, with the hygienist able to do that for themselves,
mm-hmm.
that's totally taken out of the equation.
Yep, and it's great for time management, patient comfort, like you said. It's wonderful. And actually, a lot of the dentists that I have talked to are not even considering hiring a hygienist if they are not qualified to administer local anesthesia. And I would say at least 11 of the 12 dental hygiene programs in the state of Ohio have now implemented the local anesthesia training directly into their curriculum. So what we are doing is, as the student gets within a few weeks from graduation, the Northeast Regional Board agency will allow a dental hygiene student to take the Northeast Regional Board local anesthesia exam, and once they've passed it, that can be part of their entire license application and qualification.
Oh, so right before graduation?
Yes, I think it has to be within 45 days they are allowed to take the Northeast Regional Board local anesthesia exam.
Well, that's good. That's good.
So, I mean, there really is not a reason for, you know, at least in the next year or two, if a dentist is in the process of hiring a hygienist, not to require that hygienist, before they are employed, be qualified to administer local anesthesia.
Okay. All right. So I'll have to start being more assertive, huh? And put
well,
the hammer
you sure.
down.
You sure should, because that puts that requirement or mandate then back on the dental hygiene programs, which we are all in compliance so far.
Great. We have to go to a break. Can you hang with us?
Sure.
Okay. Perfect. You are listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230. We will be right back. Talk 1230 WYTS. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning. I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and today we're talking about who's who in the dental office, specifically dental hygienists, the practice of dental hygiene. And before the break, we're talking about how hygienists can now provide local anesthetic directly to patients. And Denise, thanks for hanging with us.
Sure.
And I have to tell you this story. I have to tell this story because when I was in dental school, we had to learn how to numb by numbing each other. And I'll have to say that was the most nerve-wracking day of my life to date. And partly because what they do is they pair you up, and the person I was paired with, his nickname was Dr. Labong.
Oh, boy.
Okay?
Okay.
B-O-N-G. Just what you thought I said. And so I wasn't exactly sure that that would be the person I would want to be doing this to begin with. And I'm sitting there with my mouth open, and of course, you know, you feel very vulnerable with your mouth open.
Uh-huh.
And he puts, and he, you know how when you put a syringe in, you need to pull back slightly?
Correct.
And you do that to make sure that you're not in a vessel, because if blood comes into the syringe, you stop, you back up, you redirect and go back in, so you're not in a vessel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm there with my mouth open, knowing that this was this person's very first time. He puts the needle in, and he goes, "Oh, expletive blood."
Wow.
And he's just, and he's like frozen, and he didn't know what to do. And they're going, okay, I hope this guy figures this out soon, because I've got my mouth open and he's got a needle.
And you can't move.
And I can't move, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they do that. That's how we learn. Mm-hmm. When I went through this local anesthesia training last summer, we worked on each other, and now that my students are learning the technique, this quarter they are working in groups of three on each other in preparation to actually be administering local anesthesia on community patients beginning in the fall.
And I think that that's very important for the public to know, is that we don't use them as guinea pigs. We use each other as guinea pigs.
Exactly. But we do that as well when we teach instrumentation. They learn to use all the instruments on each other first before we, and they have to demonstrate competence before we ever let them use instruments on community patients.
So if they don't poke somebody in the eye, then that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, usually that's kind of one of our standards.
Okay, so now what I want to do is, there's so much to talk about, I'm finding it hard to fit it all into 1 hour. And before, you know what, before I go there, I'm afraid I'm going to forget the question of the day. So let me just give the final guesses on the question of the day, and I will go ahead and give the answer now, and that way we'll have it done, and we can just talk about these important matters. So while we were gone at the break, we received an email from Rhonda in Columbus. Rhonda sent us an email saying she thought 60% of patients viewed their dental health as part of their overall health. Terry from Upper Arlington called in a guess of 90%. And George from Obetz sent an email saying he thought it was 70%. Well, the answer is actually 78%. So George from Obetz and Sue in Dublin were pretty darn close.
That's now, surprising.
And why is that surprising? Did you think it would be higher or lower?
No, I thought it would be lower, because we talk about that all the time in dental hygiene, that overall health and dental health are very much connected.
Well, what this survey is saying is that the patients get it,
mm-hmm.
but what you brought up is a very good point, because, see, in the same survey, the respondents indicated only 51% of dentists that they visited were addressing the connection between oral health and overall health. So,
wow.
See, there's this what am I trying to say? These numbers don't align.
Correct.
78% of patients get it, and only 51% of dentists and dental office staff do.
Wow.
And so, you know, so there's something that we need to, as a profession, address, and it sounds like you're already doing that at Rhodes State College.
We try.
And I have this from that same survey. There's a little discussion here about this patient who was interviewed, and they said that recently they went in for the routine hygiene visit, and during the appointment, Melissa, who was the hygienist, asked how much sleep they'd been getting. And they thought, well, that's an interesting question for a hygienist to ask. And so, as it turns out, this person was at the tail end of a particularly busy time where they'd been burning the candle at both ends.
Mm-hmm.
They shared with the hygienist what was going on in their life and asked them how they were able to tell. And, quote, fatigue, Melissa said, shows up early in your mouth. And
yes,
in fact,
it does.
And in fact, she said many symptoms of a lot of health problems show up in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a case where, in this case, Melissa, the hygienist, she does get it. And we get it at our office. But, you know, it's not like that everywhere. Obviously, the survey says only 51% of dental offices are getting that.
Right.
So I applaud you guys at Rhodes State for making sure that that is part of the curriculum, and making sure that the hygiene candidates about to graduate from your school are prepared
And, we're trying.
And to make that connection.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go to another break. I really apologize. Please stay with us. I want to get into where is dental hygiene going in the future. And I know that's an important topic, something that you would like to discuss as well. You're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko here on Talk 1230 WYTS. Talk 1230 WYTS, you're listening to Dentally Speaking with Dr. Kvitko. Good morning, I'm General Dentist Dr. Brian Kvitko, and my guest today is Denise Bowers. Denise is a teacher at Rhodes State College. Denise, are you officially a teacher, assistant professor? I'm sorry, I don't want to...
No, that's okay. I'm the director of the dental hygiene program, but I do teach. I have to have a certain number of teaching contact hours during the course of the year. So I teach at least one course every quarter, and I'm in preclinic and that type of thing.
Okay, good. Didn't want to. I want to give you your just due.
Oh no, that's fine.
Say that wrong.
That's fine.
All right, now we only have 5 minutes, and I apologize. It's been a great show. I appreciate you having you on the air.
Sure.
Before I do that, let's do this. What might the hygienist role change to become in the future? I mean, I think that's you're very involved in the legislation. Mm-hmm. You're involved in the background things that go on behind the scenes for that.
Correct.
And but before I have you answer, am I right? You said there are 11 2-year schools and
right.
1 4-year school.
There are 12 dental hygiene programs in the state of Ohio.
Okay, so and 11 of them are 2-year, which means a high school senior who graduates at age 18.
Correct.
2 years later, at age 20, can be a dental hygienist.
Yes.
Okay.
They have to apply to the college. Most of the dental hygiene programs have a waiting list, and most of the dental hygiene programs have some prerequisites that interested students need to complete before they actually matriculate into the dental hygiene program.
But not all?
Some of the programs may actually incorporate their prerequisites directly into the curriculum themselves.
Okay. So, but you're saying, let's say it's not 2 years. You're saying it's a 2-year program, but they have some courses to take.
Correct.
Before they're getting...
I actually have a student who graduated last spring from high school and completed her prerequisites and matriculated into my program in the fall.
Okay. And so
in 2 years, technically, she could be done. It's not the most advisable way to do it because we have to prepare our students for 4 to 5 licensing exams. The best way to do this is for a student who is interested, apply to the college and take all of their non-dental hygiene courses like the English comp and sociology, psychology, anatomy, physiology, microbiology, get all those classes done in the first year, and then go into the dental hygiene curriculum the last 2 years. Students that do that are far more successful.
Is it essentially 3 years then out of high school? Is what you're saying is the recommended path?
That's how I recommend to the students that I interview.
Okay, so 21, somebody graduates as a dental hygienist very realistically. Okay.
Right, absolutely.
And where's the practice of hygiene going in the future?
Well, and you may be aware, but probably a lot of the other people don't, dental hygienists are extremely concerned about the access to care issue, patients that are not being seen in low-income families and in nursing homes. And legislatively, we are pursuing a solution to this problem that would actually allow dental hygienists to go out into these nursing homes or Head Start homes or whatever and provide dental hygiene services.
Is that just in a home or a center, or is it opening up an office of dental hygiene?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
It's even in the legislation. We are not advocates of independent practice. We have no intentions of opening a dental hygiene clinic. This would all be under the complete control and auspice of the dentist.
I see. Okay. I think that sounds like a good idea as well. You guys have some great ideas. I have to tell you that I would disagree with them being able to open up their own office at age 21 with very little, training experience.
I agree.
And you can't become a dentist until, at least 8 years out of high school.
Right.
And
that is something that in Ohio, the Ohio Dental Hygienist Association actually has policy against hygienists providing services independent of a dentist. We will not do that. We will never pursue that type of legislation.
Sounds like we're going to get to work together well into the future then, because
good.
It's been a great relationship that I've had with my hygienist in the program. Denise, I really, really appreciate you being on the on our show today.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm sorry we've run out of time. Boy, maybe we could do this another day.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You guys, everybody out there, go out and enjoy the day. You've been listening to Dentally Speaking on Talk 1230 on WYTS. Join us next week where we'll have a guest from the Central Ohio Down Syndrome Association. Thank you very much. This is Dr. Kvitko.